Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, Episode 6 for November 24th, 2006. Ready Boost, Ribbon X, and PowerShell. Oh my. It's time for the Black Friday edition of Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott. Paul is, of course, the writer who is responsible for the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, writes for Windows IT Pro, and is, I think, the best Windows guy writing right now. I'm not, you know, I'm sincere.
You promised me you were going to stop doing that.
But it's true. And, okay, partly it's a good way to start the podcast because people then know that, you know, I think you've got something to say. But I think it's also true, and it's one of the reasons I'm really glad we're doing Windows Weekly, and I think it's one of the reasons it's been very successful, because I think people are really trusting you. We have a lot to talk about this week. One of the things I'm going to ask you about, because we talked a little bit about it on Twitter, and I'm very confused, is what's Vista capable? What's Vista Premium ready? What does it mean if you're going to buy a new PC for Vista? What should you look for? We'll also talk about the PowerShell, which just came out this week. 4XP, soon to be out for Vista. What Microsoft's doing between now and January 30th, because, of course, they are continuing to work on Vista, and there are new things in the works. We'll talk about that. And then some surprising news about Office 2007. I'd like to get your opinion of the Zune. I know we both got one to play with, and we'll talk about that. And coming up at the end of the show, we'll talk a little bit about Steve Gibson and what he said about the new kernel protection built into Vista. And also some very good news about future episodes. So we've got a jam-packed day today, but let's start with choosing your new Vista PC. Microsoft's muddied the waters. There's two level, at least two, that I know of Vista Capable and Vista Premium Ready. What does that mean?
Oh, I don't even know. No, I do know.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
And, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
No.
There's a table. I've seen the table.
There is a table.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so typical of Microsoft to take something very simple and turn it into something more complex. But, so this time around, there are two Windows logos, basically, that PCs can get. And the first, the basic one, is a Windows Vista capable PC. And the only promise you get there is that this thing can run Windows Vista. You know, they're not making any promises about it's going to, you know, work with Aero or any of the advanced features, but it will... You know, Windows Vista will boot up and run. So,
okay.
Talking about a very basic.
And does that mean run okay? Another at an acceptable performance too, or
no?
It doesn't it even mean that.
No, because one of the requirements for that logo is 512 megs of RAM, which is an absolute minimum for Windows Vista. Now, I've actually been testing Windows Vista on such a system. It actually has a much faster processor than the 800 megahertz, minimum requirement. But
that's
it does have 512.
That's awful. Yeah. You couldn't. Yeah, no, okay. You couldn't run it. That's ridiculous.
No, it is ridiculous. So, yeah. Unless you're doing something very basic, like running a single application at a time, that's not going to cut it. But technically speaking, it will run. You know, Windows Vista. So I think people listening to this podcast, for example, are going to be more interested in the other logo, which is the Windows Vista Premium Ready PC logo. And these are PCs that can take advantage of the advanced features of Windows Vista. And the things get a little murky here, but basically what this amounts to is, you know, 1 gigahertz processor or better, 1 gigabyte of RAM or better, and then that DirectX 9 compatible graphics processor with certain technical requirements that allow it to run Windows Aero.
Hardware pixel shading.
Whatever that means. Right.
You've but got it, you know you've got it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of people really focus on these technical requirements, that the hardware pixel shader that you mentioned, the WDDM driver support, which is the new Windows device driver model, a certain amount of RAM for certain display resolutions, etc. But the truth is, the majority of PCs sold today, I mean, the vast majority, except for the very, very low-end PCs and low-end laptops, will run Windows Aero just fine.
You need a certain amount of video RAM, depending on the screen resolution. That may be the one sticking point, you know, if you don't have a lot.
It might be, but, you know, it's funny because 64 megabytes of RAM is the minimum for, say, a 1024 by 768 type screen or a little bit higher. You couldn't buy a video card today with that little amount of RAM for the most part, right?
So most screens, if you have 128 megs of VRAM, most screens will handle it, unless you have a super big screen.
That's 128 megs of RAM is 1920 by 1200.
Okay, that's pretty
big.
Which
is that's 1080p, right?
Yeah,
That's huge. So,
that's
no problem.
How about and this is something that, you know, I think we really muddied the waters on Twit on Sunday. Because we talked about the one thing that's really new and different, which is the hybrid drive.
Yes.
And how much is it required for performance? It's not required, obviously.
It's not required. No, it's recommended.
But for does it make a big difference? In other words, do you really need it to have a decent performance?
No, because I don't
have
one.
That was the thing was the assertion that that I think was probably incorrect on Twit, was that it won't run very well without one of these things. But you can't get them, so we don't know.
Right. I was going to say, I've been running them without this kind of drive, and it runs great. In fact, It runs fantastically. So I don't have a particularly high end system. I don't. You know, I do have SATA hard drives and so forth. But you know, Windows Vista runs, I would say, just about as well. Again, non scientifically. Yeah. You know, on laptops, on desktops.
I'm running it in a virtual machine, for crying out loud. Now I don't get Arrow, but it runs fine.
Sure.
So the hybrid drive, just so people understand, is as I get it, is a drive that has a huge amount of cache, solid state cache. It's flash RAM, like a gigabyte or more of cache.
A gigabyte or more, yeah. Well, remember that, you know, it was just a few years ago, hard drive makers were coming out with drives that, you know, bump the amount of, you know, on disk memory or the cache from I don't know what it was,
two megabytes to
eight, right? And then to 16. And those were considered huge advances,
right?
You know, in performance. And when you go from 16 megabytes or 8 megabytes to 1 gigabyte or more, obviously,
you can have a cache that's too big because then it slows you down searching it. But what I gather is that Vista is written specifically to see this hybrid drive and say, oh, good, let me cache stuff that I know you're going to be using a lot.
Exactly. And it's unclear that these drives will even work on older versions of Windows. Perhaps the drive maker would have to ship some sort of driver to, you know, make XP compatible. So Windows Vista is natively aware of these drives and can work with them natively.
One of the things that I'm going to ask you because you're the expert. I think it was Bill McCrone or maybe it was Dvorak had made the assertion that if you have a certain kind of fast flash thumb drive, you could plug it in and it'll be used in that hybrid drive fashion as cache for your rotating.
Yeah,
drive.
It's not exactly the same feature. In fact, these things have confusingly similar names. So I'll mix them up. But one of them is called Windows Ready Boost, and which I believe is the use of a hybrid flash hard drive.
Okay.
And the other one is called Windows Ready Drive, which actually, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I got those reversed. So it's Windows Ready Boost.
The flash, the flat thumb drive.
Yeah, that sounds like it probably is what it is.
Anyway, one or the other. So there are, no wonder this confusion, to be honest.
Yeah, right. A, everything in Windows has to start with the word Windows. And then in this case, these both start with Ready and then something that begins with B. So they're very similar, but
I think the Boost, as I remember, Ready Boost lets you use a removable flash card, like a thumb drive. But it has to be a certain kind of thumb drive.
Exactly. And unfortunately, in that case, you can't really, it's very hard to say this is or isn't going to work unless you just plug it in and see.
Right.
You know, so if you plug in your...
Until people start shipping these with that on the box.
Well, right. Actually, there are some technical requirements, I guess, you can look at, and it has to have certain read and write speeds and so forth. Mm-hmm. But what I found is that you just take a USB 2.0 drive, plug it in, and when the auto play menu comes up, you can see if one of the options is this computer run faster with Ready Boost. So.
Now, it doesn't necessarily improve the performance, but it's things like waking up from sleep or faster, things like that, right?
It's supposed to actually improve the performance because basically it's additional RAM. And, you know, if you think about it, you could have a 1 gigabyte, 2 gigabyte USB memory key. If you dedicated a gig, you know, to the system, it's essentially RAM. I mean, it's not used exactly in the same way as RAM, but it does the same thing. It allows things to stay resident in RAM and not be written out or read from the hard drive.
Right.
So thus improving performance. But.
So Ready Boost is a flash card. Ready Drive is a drive that has this flash, a hybrid disk drive that has this flash built into it.
I believe that is correct.
Yes, I'm actually looking at the Microsoft page. I had to look it up.
Yeah, it is confusing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got it. But it sounds like it would be something that you would look for on a Vista Premium Ready computer, except that you can't because they're not out yet.
So, in these drives, I'm really curious about them, and I'll be happy to test one. I can't wait to get one. But I don't know if you know this, but I'm curious whether these drives are going to come in normal hard drive capacities, or whether they're going to be those smaller drives where maybe you use them as just a boot device. And, remember, I think it was IBM and then maybe Hitachi had come up with those super fast ATA and serial ATA drives that, were 36 gigs, and then eventually they were 72 gigs. But, of course, today you can buy, 500 or 600 gigs in a single drive.
Right, yeah. 500 so. Well, I'm trying to remember who is making the first of these. It's one company.
Is it Hitachi? It's Samsung.
Samsung, that's what it is. Okay.
I think.
They say, let's see. First thing you have to do is look at how old the article is that you're reading, because it's, it's really changed. Samsung and Seagate have announced hybrid drives that integrate in a 1.5-inch magnetic hard disk with up to 256 megs of onboard flash. That's changed already. But they don't say how big the drives are here.
I've never seen that. The thing is that's interesting is I believe that they're not coming out until early next year. Okay. And if I'm not mistaken, the first versions are actually going to be targeted at laptop computers, not at desktops. And that suggests that they'll be the smaller form factor drives.
Right.
And it also suggests lower capacities.
Right.
Because those, laptop type hard drives, I believe today only go up to about 160 gigabytes.
That's the biggest I've seen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see. But like I said, I'd be happy to try one out.
And the most important takeaway here is it's not a requirement. It can't be because it's not out yet.
Exactly. It's just a recommendation.
Right. Okay. PowerShell came out. This is the command line that Microsoft's been touting for a while. Is it what Monad was going to be?
Exactly.
Okay. But it's not Monad, because Monad had some severe security issues, as I remember.
No, it is Monad. It's the same. Okay. It's been renamed. They've fixed it up.
PowerShell.
And that's a great name.
I think it's a very good name. It's a shell. It's a command line. It's powerful. Right now, it's Windows XP.
Right.
Is it? And it's eventually going to be for Vista, probably even by the time Vista comes out.
That's what they said. By January 30th, they'll ship a version for Windows
But you
Vista.
Download it.
Yes.
Is it free?
It is free.
And have you played with it at all? I mean, is it just a DOS? Is it just batch files? What is it?
No. It's actually far more. And I'm really impressed now because, again, this is one of those products that Microsoft has had sitting around internally for years and years. And now that it's coming out, it's really interesting the ways that they're going to use it. So after Longhorn Server, which is the next version of Windows Server, Windows PowerShell will be included with Windows, right? It will be one of the shells that you'll be able to access in Windows. Probably the default shell, I would imagine, by that point.
So Vista still has a command line, a DOS
it has that,
command line. Okay.
That's right, right.
But this might replace that.
Yeah, I would hope so. I would see them, my guess, and this is just a guess, is that they'll probably keep them both for a little while for backwards compatibility reasons. But right now, they're two completely different environments. They're going to be using it with other products, right? Exchange Server 2007, which is shipping in December, will have an integrated version of the Windows PowerShell for Exchange, where you can actually script Exchange tasks. So, for example, if you want to create a bunch of new users or change permissions or bump everyone's mailbox up to the same size, that's very easy to do with scripting. And I think, not that Exchange is necessarily an exciting topic for people listening to this, but if you think about the big sea change that's occurred there is that, in the past, Windows programs were always built as graphical user interfaces. And then if there was any scripting or programmability, that was tacked on later. And in this case, they did the reverse. They did a very Unix-style thing, which is they created everything through the shell, and then the GUI actually builds on top of the shell.
See, I like that. I mean, I like to have both capabilities, and I think a good shell is really an important part of an operating system. It allows you also to automate a lot of stuff, and that's why network administrators like it, but even end users want to be able to do this, I think.
Absolutely. So if you're familiar with Unix-style shells like Bash or C Shell or whatever, those shells are extremely popular. They're powerful. Mm. They're far more powerful and even elegant than, say, something like the command line in Windows XP or the MS-DOS type shell. The one problem with those shells is that they're really inconsistent. If you don't really know what you're doing, each shell command or each script, you know, takes some sort of an input and then outputs something. And you have to know what that something is so that you can deal with it on the other end.
Right. Well, they're separate applications.
Right. They're all completely different. So one of the deals with the PowerShell is that the input and the output are always consistent and that you always know exactly what you're, you know, putting in and what you're getting out. So it's also discoverable if you're into this sort of thing. I mean, you know that you can get man pages in Unix and so forth, but you can actually get help in line as you're typing. You'll be prompted with, you know, if you type in the, you know, the name of a method, it will actually prompt you with the parameters that you can use so that you don't have to look anything up as you go.
I think this is tremendously exciting.
Yeah, it's very powerful. So it's based on .NET, you know, object-oriented. It's just, it's got all the good
stuff. It's something really that's, I think, been lacking in Windows. And the fact that they're going to add this now is really great news. And it gives power users, you know, people who listen to this show are clearly power users, mm-hmm. a chance to really start without, you know, getting into deep programming, start to do a lot of stuff.
Right, right.
I'm looking and at it. You can download the documentation now that the shell is free and available for download. Boy, if I were a young guy getting started in Windows, I'd be learning this right now.
My sort of break with the programming world happened when XML took off, and I decided that my brain is no longer
it's over
big enough
for us.
I just can't. Yeah, I can't do this anymore.
But it is. I think it's great, and I use the command line a lot in Unix, and of course in Linux and OS X. And so I'm glad to see something on Windows that'll give us that kind of automation.
Exactly.
This is one of a number of projects. I mean, just because Vista's gone gold doesn't mean Microsoft stops working on it. They're going to add a lot before it ships to end users January 30th. Obviously, drivers must be one thing they're working on.
Right, and that's the big deal. So, you know, there were a number of stories this week about that. You know, Microsoft's still working on Vista, you know. But I can't remember if we talked about
this
before.
I would hope they're still working on Vista. You know,
well, they finished it. Why?
Well, it's all done.
It's done. Let's take a vacation.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big concerns that Microsoft had when they talked to me about the final version, and this is something I was actually up on, but it's an interesting problem to have, which is, you know, if you review Windows Vista today, you know, you install it on your PC and you try to load all your drivers, you know, things aren't going to work. You know, some devices you have just won't have drivers. It's just the way it is. And this is a different experience that people are going to have on January 30th, because between that November 8 RTM date and the January 30th launch date, all the hardware manufacturers are going to have that 2.5 months, whatever that is, to actually work on and ship their drivers. So if you were to install it on January 30th, your system would be able to connect to Windows Update, download those additional drivers, and you probably find that you're going to have a much, much, much better experience than we're having today. So that's important to note, because, you know, people are going to review this, and some of the crustier, you know, kind of reviewers are going to say, oh,
it doesn't
work
with anything.
It doesn't work with anything. So take that with a grain of salt, because
they should know. I mean, we've been through this more than once. Yeah. This is not anything new. In fact, XP Service Pack 2 installs with a lot more stuff, works with a lot more stuff, works better. It's always that way.
Right. So out of the box, I mean, you know, Microsoft is claiming that, you know, Windows Vista ships with far more drivers than XP ever did. And then that will get even better by launch time, because, you know, even today it works this way. I mean, on all of my systems, you know, it installs probably 90% or better of the drivers it needs on any given system. But the first time you boot into the desktop, connects to Windows Update, downloads any additional drivers, installs them automatically. It's a nice way to do it.
Are they working on, is there a power pack or a plus pack? Are they working on that kind of stuff too?
Yeah, sort of. So they're having something they call Windows Ultimate Extras. These are the additional applications and services that people who buy Windows Vista Ultimate get. And I think the sad part of this is that this is literally in lieu of an actual plus pack. So, that just basically means if you don't buy that most expensive version,
you aren't going to get it.
You can't get this stuff. You can't, you know, pay a little extra.
But it comes with Windows Vista Ultimate. You'll have everything.
Well, it doesn't actually come in the box. You'll be able to download them from Windows Update.
Okay.
Yeah.
Free.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you paid for it. I mean, you paid extra.
So what do you get?
Well, they're not saying, and that's one of the things I don't appreciate. But we do know two of the things that will be in there, and neither of these are particularly impressive. But one of them is the Texas Hold'em game that was originally. I know it's crazy, but it was originally. Yeah, it was going to ship in all versions of Vista, but and I don't quite understand this, but apparently in some of the locales to which Microsoft ships Windows, this would have been unacceptable for certain reasons. So yeah. They're actually just providing it through. Yeah, okay, there. I thought it was Texas. So I'm not sure why, but there you go. Yeah, that makes sense. It's gambling. So yeah. The other one is
it an online-enabled game?
You know, that I don't know.
It must be. Actually. I mean, what's it? Well, anyway, okay. We'll find out.
Yeah, I can't stand Texas Hold'em. I think Texas Hold'em has destroyed poker for all time. That's another podcast.
You're a seven-card stud guy. I can tell. Just look at it.
I don't get it. It's like piles of chips, and everyone has to be like a wrestler personality.
That's right. It's all about personality. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That's not my kind of thing.
Are you a draw guy or a stud? You're more of a stud.
I'm not much of a gambler, frankly, okay. But I'm more of a, we're going to hang out with the guys and eat pizza and drink beer.
That's my, yeah.
Yeah, maybe a card game.
I come for the pretzels and beer. That's
yeah.
Office 2007's user interface. Oh, well, you said, wait a minute. Before we get to that, you said there were two programs. So Hold'em is one. Right.
Well, the only other one we know about is Motion Desktop, and that's that thing we discussed way back.
Yeah,
it's just an animated desktop. So behind your icons and everything, you'll have a waterfall or clouds scrolling by.
I would guess that everybody listening to this podcast is going to buy Ultimate for themselves and tell mom to get, probably the home premium, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'll definitely be running. I would, not that I actually have to go out and pay for it per se, but if I were buying a new PC tomorrow, for example,
right,
I would absolutely ensure that I was getting Ultimate. Yeah.
So PCs will ship with Ultimate because we did talk about this Express upgrade or whatever they call it system.
Sure.
I would think PC manufacturers, in order to keep the price down, might ship it with, let's say, Home Basic or maybe Business. Figuring, well, they'll never know. And then they get it home, and they realize they have to pay another $89 to upgrade.
Right. Well, so if you go to Best Buy or Compio, say, guaranteed you're going to see Home Premium all over the place.
That's the one.
That's going to be the mainstream version. But if you go up to Dell.com or HP.com or any of those other websites, how you can go in and pick the version you want. So they're going to have the different layers, and you can add or subtract.
Yeah. I wish I could do it now because I want to. I don't even mind if I don't get it till January 30th, but I just want to get off the ball and get this thing. We've been talking about
it's like you're jonesing
long.
Or something.
We've been talking about it for so long.
I'll sell you a copy.
No, it's all right. Hey, did you ever get the last time we talked? You had paused your download. Did it all get down and you got running it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
So you're running your build 6000 now.
Uh huh. Oh, yeah, it's been great. I have to say, I mean, it's what's the date? It's probably been about 2 weeks.
Yep.
So overall,
much
it's been
different
very good
from the RC2 that you'd been running.
No, I mean they changed some icons and. No, I mean, it's got the feel of a finished product. And again, a few months ago, this seemed like this was an impossibility.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Is it stable? Is it very stable?
It's extremely stable from what I can tell. We've got, there's a very cool utility in Windows. Let me bring it up now so I can tell you the exact name. But there's a neat new utility in Windows Vista that gives you a reliability report. So if you go into computer management, which you can get by opening a start menu, right click computer.
This is, by the way,
manage.
A preview of what you're going to be hearing on the podcast once January 30th rolls around. We're going to actually start telling you stuff that you can do. So right click, but you could do that before. Right click on my computer and get the manage.
This comes up in XP, but one of the additional features that's in there is a new, an option in here. It's reliability and performance.
Oh, cool.
And there are a couple of tools in there. So there's a performance monitor, which we've had in Windows, ever since the original version of NT, but there's a reliability monitor, and this is extremely cool. And it's hard to describe, in words, but what you basically get is a chart that goes across time. So in the case of my computer here that I'm looking at now, I can see that I installed this system on 11/08/2006, and it had a system reliability rating on that day of 10, as you might expect, because there were no problems. But this thing goes up and down on a line graph based on when I had problems. So on the 14th, for example, if I scroll down to the problem list, I can see that Zune setup failed. So I tried to install Microsoft Zune software. It doesn't work on Windows Vista, so it failed. And then another executable, which I don't actually recognize, failed. and you know, it gets minus marks. Yeah, so this thing goes up and down. So as of today, actually, my reliability index is 7.55 on the system, which actually isn't fantastic, but or it doesn't seem fantastic.
But it was only applications that failed, not the operating system. And see, exactly. To me, that's what I'm looking for. I don't care about. I know applications will die.
Yeah. So if you look, if looking across this chart, it's really nice because there are nice graphics to tell you that I've had 3 days where applications failed. It was Internet Explorer failed twice, Windows Live Messenger failed once, and that's actually a known problem on Vista. The latest beta doesn't work very well. But when days go by and the system does nothing but create shadow copies, and you run it all day and nothing bad happens, you know, the thing creeps up a little bit. So it goes up and down, up and
down.
In
a way, it's a gutsy thing for any company to do this, and it shows Microsoft's confidence, frankly.
Sure.
And I think it sounds like it's been justified. It sounds like the last 2 weeks you've been pretty problem-free.
Yeah, so this is the type of data that will be nice for troubleshooting problems. You know, when your system crashes, you can go in here and look and see why it crashed. And, you know, if it's a piece of hardware that doesn't work properly, or maybe your memory is not working properly, or whatever it is, it's nice to be able to say, you know, in plain English, this is what the problem is. So it's pretty nice.
Now we can move on to Office 2007. Okay. No, I have to say, I'm the more we talk about this, the more excited I am about Vista. I think it's really starting to.
We got to get you a copy. I can't believe you're not running Vista yet.
Well, I'm running RC2, but I will get the gold.
I know. I mean, I'm embarrassed for you.
Well, and you know, it's funny because I have an Athlon FX64. That's what I use. That's my Windows machine. But it's running XP. And I think I would like to try 64, but okay,
I think you're a fool. But.
let's not get crazy here. Okay. Office 2007. This is an interesting move from Microsoft. First time they've ever done it. They're licensing the UI.
Yes. And I talked to Microsoft about this way back a year ago, October. And they showed off this user interface for the first time. And I said to them at the time, you have got to give this away to people. I would give anything to see a version of Adobe Photoshop was the example I used at the time that used this interface, because that's a perfect example of an application that has a completely inscrutable user interface unless you really know what you're doing. And if it could just expose functionality like that, how wonderful would that be? So,
well, there's also a great benefit. You learn one program, you can use others.
Exactly. So, you know, after a little initial controversy over this new user interface, I think people that have used it overwhelmingly have really grown to love it. So they're licensing this technology for free. It's called Ribbon X after the ribbon style user interface. They're going to allow anyone that wants it to be able to create their own applications that use this style.
That's great.
Of user interface. It's neat. Yeah.
So it'll be a library in Visual Studio, I guess.
Yeah, I would imagine so, yeah.
Yeah, makes it very easy for developers to use it. And, you know, I don't think Adobe will ever change the Photoshop interface. That's highly unlikely.
That's my prayer.
That's never going to happen because so many people, unlike you, have learned how to use it. Okay. But I think for a new application, what a great way to kind of get a leg up on usability.
Sure.
Finally, we've been playing, both of us, with the Zune, Microsoft's iPod killer. I noticed Bill Gates last week backed down a little bit on that. In fact, he was at Stanford. He praised the iPod effusively, said it was brilliant, well-designed, and dubbed the Zune a modest little proposal.
I know. I have the Zune is tough for me because as I write about this in the review I have not published yet, but years ago, somebody from Microsoft, a friend of mine who at the time was really involved with MSN Music, had come to me and said, hey, listen, I'm not saying we're doing this, but if Microsoft were to put out an iPod-like device, what would you like to see? And I said, you know what? If you can't kill the iPod functionally, if you can't come out with something that is absolutely killer, you need not to do it, because if you come out and fail with a device, it's over. You know, it's game over. You will never recover. The Windows Media Technologies will wither and die.
You don't get a second chance is what you're saying.
No. I mean, once Microsoft comes out with their own device, I mean, think about what they had to do this. You know, they basically screwed over all their partners. You know, all those companies that made their own devices, all those companies that made their own services, none of which are compatible with this thing. They've done their own thing. I mean, talk about sending mixed messages too, right? It's not compatible with anything.
Well, and it's very frustrating, although maybe that's a way of distancing it. Maybe it's a way of avoiding what you just described, because if it fails, yeah. Well, at least Windows Media Player isn't tarnished by it.
Well, I know, but I mean, imagine the situation a year from now. If Microsoft comes to their senses and says, you know what, actually, that Zune thing, that was just a joke. We were kidding. you know, here's the next generation of portable media players, or here's the next generation of...
Yeah, you're right.
Who cares? I mean, it just sounds ridiculous.
Never mind.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think there's a lot to like about the Zune. I mean, the first time I held it, I was very impressed. I had a brown Zune, and it looked good, better than I thought a brown music player would. It's a little big, but I like the finish of it. The screen's great.
I like the finish. I like that the entire top of it seems to have some sort of it's almost like Lucite, you know.
I like that too. Yeah,
it's got a nice grip.
No fingerprints. Feels good.
Yes. Now it's not really that big unless you're used to the iPod. So if you've never owned one of these things, I don't think it's horrible.
No, it's not much bigger even than the older iPods, but it is bigger than the new ones.
Oh goodness! I mean, it looks almost twice as thick. Yeah. You know, it is tough to compare them.
And
like
given the battery life that people are reporting, I don't understand why it's bigger. I can see if you put a bigger battery in.
It's got to be the wireless. And I've actually specifically left the wireless on in the sort of vain hope that...
I'll
get this lonely little Zune signal someday. Tell me, is that you? can we share something, please?
Same thing with me. I've been walking all over town hoping somebody would squirt something at me, but nobody...
Well, I'll tell you. If you want to link up with a Zune, you're going to have to go visit Microsoft because nobody has these things.
Yeah, or come to Massachusetts, but one or the other.
Right. Well, I brought my Zune over to Best Buy the other day because I was going to try to hook up with one in the store,
right?
Just so I could write about it,
right?
And the only one they had was broken.
Oh man.
And it was sad. So
there's nothing worse than a social device. That's all alone.
That treats you like a pariah.
Well, that's your problem.
Yeah. Anyway, they've gotten some things right. The screen is nice. It's big. I like the way it sort of auto switches to landscape mode, you know, when a movie's playing.
They did a good user interface, I think.
I like it. I mean, if you're familiar with the old portable media center players, it's very similar to that.
It's kind of like a gigabit. Right, it's kind of like Toshiba makes both, doesn't it? I
was going to say, it's not just kind of like a gigabit.
It's exactly like a gigabit.
It's a lot like a gigabit, But
it's actually a little bigger, though. The gigabit was actually smaller.
It's logical. And, you know, the funny thing is this little pad, which is very similar, it looks like a scroll wheel, but
that's
it's not.
Frustrating. You really want to go. Don't. The first thing I did,
you spin it into this. It should laugh at you when you do that. It's just, you know.
Don't spin.
This controller, though, it's funny because this would work better for games, I bet, than the iPod's interface. Right. And, of course, there are no games. But
there's no video either, which is a little weird.
No video.
I guess now with Xbox Live, you can get video. I don't know if it will copy over to the Zune Marketplace, but the Xbox Marketplace is now doing video, so.
Yeah, TV shows and video.
Why can't they combine them?
The same people make them.
It doesn't work for Play for sure. It doesn't work with MSN Music. Doesn't work with the Windows Media Player.
That's the other thing, by the way. You know, the software that they ship for this thing, which is just this 200-step process to getting this thing installed.
Way too complicated.
Oh, my goodness.
And the thing is, I got a pass, you know, to the Zune pass, but you have to enter the number at the right place in the right time. I entered it in three different wrong places, and it's a long number. It's never clear if you're doing it the right spot. It's got a lot of, they need a lot of work on that.
It really does, yeah. So, early adopters, I'm just trying to imagine the group of people that would look at this and say, yep, this is what I've been waiting for.
You have to be, a Microsoft fanboy, frankly.
And that's... Yeah, how sad is that?
Well, there are a lot of them, but I think that's who's going to buy this. One thing it did change my mind about one thing and one thing only, and that is subscription music. You know, there's two ways to buy music. Of course, there's the iTunes model, which is 99 cents a song, $10 a CD, and you own it. The other model is the Yahoo Music model, the MSN Music model, where you pay a monthly subscription fee, and you can listen to anything. And so I have a Zune Marketplace pass, as I said, and I filled the Zune right away. It's really fun because you just go, psh, 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 psh. Oh, I'll take that. And anything you want, but it's there.
Let me ask you something. So I've always thought, I mean, and this goes back years, you know, that the subscription model would eventually make more sense. Now, in the market, that's not happened. You know, there's very small. But, you know, I'm getting old enough now where the notion of me discovering new music is declining rapidly, right? I mean, I do, you know, find new music occasionally each year, but it's going down, you know? And it seems like, you know, for all those classic songs that I like, you know, the things you would hear on classic rock stations typically or whatever, you know, I can buy those things once and kind of own them and it's okay. But, you know, it seems like the subscription stuff would work best for people who were younger, who were actively seeking new music, right, and wanted a service where they could go and get some nice discoverability going, where, you know, the thing could say, hey, you seem to listen to a lot of this group. Why don't you try these guys?
There's another group it works well for. Mm-hmm. A group that's never had a portable media player and frankly, that's who the Zune's for. Is if you have an investment in any other music store, forget it. But if you've never owned a music player, you've never downloaded music, and you've never ripped your CDs, all of a sudden you pay one. I don't know what it is. Is it $20 a month? I don't know what it is. But
it's $14.95.
So $15 a month, and you have access to the whole catalog, so you can fill that Zune. I mean, think about it. Yeah. Somebody who's never ripped a CD and has no music on their computer. 30 gigabytes is a lot. You put one song on your Zune, what are you going to do?
Having ripped my entire music collection, and then actually as gifts for two of my friends, having ripped their music collections to hard drives, it is a lengthy... Yeah. Oh, no, God. Right. I mean, and talk about an error-prone process,
right,
too.
Right.
And it's even harder when you don't know the music, you know?
Well, here you get all the album art. You get it, you know, it's done for you. So I think that's an audience, and I don't know... if that's a big audience, I don't know who that is, but that's an audience.
You know what? There's a sweet spot they need to hit, and it has to do with the price per month, because, you know, this is yet another monthly fee.
Right.
You know, for a lot of people, you know, $14.95 doesn't sound like a lot, but every single month on top of your cable, your phone, everything else. Starts to add up. So, you know, would $9.95 make a lot more sense? You know, would they get so many more customers that would start to make sense, or, you know, even less? It's kind of hard to say, but it seems like $14.95 is just a little too expensive.
Maybe they need to lower it a little bit. But I do. But it did convince me that there is some merit to that. I mean, I wasn't going to put my iPod. I couldn't really put much of my iPod music, because a lot of it I've purchased online, onto the Zune. So I was kind of, what am I going to do? Well, this is great.
Right.
And they have playlists. So if you're a Paul Simon fan, you just drag all the Paul Simon over. Of course, what you realize quickly is that the record labels haven't licensed a lot of music for the subscription form.
I know. I should know better than this. It's funny because I write about this stuff. I think about this stuff a lot. I saw an ad, a news piece on TV about the Beatles had allowed their music to be, you know, reassembled in new ways for that Love show.
Right.
I think, oh, this is great. I'll go buy this online, and I went to all the different online services, and I thought, how come I can't find this? Oh, right, because the Beatles.
The Beatles. Although this is the first step, apparently Martin said that after he finished Love, his next George Martin said his next project is to remaster and put online the Beatles.
Yeah, I'd heard that he was doing that. Yeah. So
Love's
that's
worth
great.
It. DVD extra is really cool, but the CD's out, and it's five,
no, but now I have
five
to
ones
I have
around.
To, you know, get in my car, I drive to the store and buy a CD.
And, you know, it's like, I don't want to do that anymore.
What is this, 1979? You
know, I'm done with that. And we're done with this. We do want to say that coming up on future podcasts, we're going to start bringing in some, you know, everybody at Microsoft, and some great people are coming in. Not to do a hype for, you know, an ad for Microsoft, but to really talk about what's going on inside.
You know, if they start hyping the products, we can do that Bill Riley thing.
That'd
where we just
fun.
Turn off their microphone.
No, get out of here. No, I think that's very exciting. I'm looking forward to that. I do want to mention that if you listened, and if you haven't listened to it, listen to it. What?
You, Steve Gibson.
Yes. If you haven't listened to Steve Gibson's Security Now from yesterday, you might want to listen to it. He's talking about this new kernel protection technology that is in Windows Vista 64. It is not. It's in the 64-bit version of XP and Windows, not in the 32-bit version. It's, as you know, you probably know, it's been cracked. And in fact, was pretty crackable.
Wow, what a surprise.
It turns out it's very easily cracked. And I won't scoop Steve, but do listen. His point, I think, is that this was never intended to stop bad guys, at least not average bad guys. It was intended
to stop good guys.
To stop good guys, exactly.
Interesting.
And the good guys will be stopped. And that means then Microsoft can take the next step, which is to actually put real kernel protection in a later version. Anyway, so that's worth listening to if you're interested in Vista security.
And of course, you know, Steve Gibson is, he's great. I mean, he just knows his stuff. So.
Well, he loves you too. It's great. These are two podcasts that are kind of must listen to.
Just talk about each other the whole time. Let me tell you how great Steve Gibson is.
No, he is great. And this is one that Windows users will be, I think, particularly interested in. It is online at twit.tv/SN. And we are all done, Paul. I really appreciate it. I hope you'll have a happy Thanksgiving Day weekend. Enjoy your time off, and we'll be back next week.
Well, actually, I need to talk to you about next week because Thursday is that event in New York for the business launch, which I will be at. So Wednesday afternoon through Thursday night, I'll be gone.
Maybe we could get a report from the launch.
I could try to do that, although, you know, I can't guarantee.
Well, we'll think about something.
What the quality is like. So
certainly, worst case scenario, we'll do something Friday, for air Friday, about the launch. In fact, let's say that the next edition of Windows Weekly, whenever it comes out, it might be a little late as a result, will be covering the business launch of Windows Vista, which is next week. Hey, that's exciting.
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, Paul Thurrott. You can catch Paul's great work at the Supersite for Windows, which is winsupersite.com. And his blog is also online. It has a dash in it.
My blog does. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes, it does.
It is. What is it?
Internet-nexus.com.
I always miss that dash. Internet-nexus.
I'm sure Internet-nexus without a dash is probably a porn site or something.
Yeah, so make sure you enter the dash no matter what. We'll see you next time on Windows Week, sir.